This is Common Ground, a program on world affairs and the people who shape events.
So immigrants have always really supported Mexico through supporting their families back home. But now a lot of women are coming up here by themselves and they're sending their remittances back. And so women are sort of becoming part of the backbone of the Mexican economy.
This week, we continue our series about women living on the U.S.-Mexico border. Common Ground is produced by the Stanley Foundation. I'm Mary Gray Davidson. It's estimated that 2,000 new people settle each week in the border town of Ciudad Juarez, Mexico. These newcomers from the interior of Mexico and throughout Central America travel north with the hope of creating better lives for themselves and their families. They're drawn to the border by the prospect of jobs in one of the thousands of border factories called maquiladoras that have sprung up over the last two decades. Though these newcomers may be fleeing desperate poverty or even government repression, their problems don't always end when they reach the border. The exploding population in these border towns has created an infrastructure nightmare, and cities can't begin to provide enough decent housing or sanitation. More than half the population in Juarez live below the poverty line, and there are few government programs to respond to their needs. But there are some people who've taken it upon themselves to improve the situation on the border, and American journalist Debbie Nathan, who's based in El Paso, Texas, just across the Rio Grande from Juarez, says many of them are women.
I think that a lot of women here are replicating what you're seeing in Latin America, which is that a lot of the politics, particularly politics at the grassroots levels, the most progressive things that are being done in Latin America are often being done by women. And you see the same thing on this side of the border. You see a lot of neighborhood organizing around global issues and around labor issues, organizing around environmental issues, around health issues. The people that are at the forefront are women, and it's quite moving to see that because you have cultures that are because of the national culture or because of the class culture, because the people are poor or because they happen to come out of cultures where, you know, so-called machismo is very, very dominant. It's very compelling and impressive and very moving to see women working with those kinds of situations and taking these leadership positions.
My name is Carmen Ibarra Dominguez. I am from Mexico, and I have been living in El Paso for 26 years. If you know that for a lot of years, for more than 50 years, the garment industry was the best thing here in El Paso to work, the best places to work. I started working in 1968 by Farah. I think this factory was one of the biggest here in El Paso, and we have benefits like insurance, health insurance. We have doctors over there because they have their own clinic, and also we have paydays and vacations and everything. But like I said before, after the Twin Plaza agreement, everything went out and down and down.
Carmen Ibarra saw her good job as a garment worker go across the border, where she says factories can get away with paying workers $4 a day instead of the $4.25 an hour minimum they would receive in neighboring El Paso. This was one result of what many refer to as the Twin Plant Agreement between the United States and Mexico, which allows American and other foreign companies to establish low-wage assembly plants, maquiladoras, along the Mexican frontier. When the good jobs left El Paso, Ibarra says, they were replaced by sweatshops, which live up to their name in this region of desert heat.
Yes, we call sweatshops, or in Espanol, talleres de hambre. Why? because they are working in a small building, in old houses, with odd air conditioning this summer.
With temperatures over 100 degrees every day?
Yes, ma'am. And a lot of them, they don't have water to drink. They had to carry the water from their houses. The restroom doesn't work. They don't have water to drink, and they don't have any air, fresh air.
Do they have fans that are blowing on them?
Nothing, yeah. You're going to find a lot of these places here in El Paso.
In El Paso?
Yes. It's after the twin plants, they grown up, the sweatshops grown up after that.
There are more sweatshops now than there were before. And why do you think that is?
It's because most of these sweatshops, they are running for a person who was a supervisor or a manager of the big plants. And when they left to Mexico, they were the only ones who got some money, I mean, some retirement. So they start running their own business.
And as far as the workday goes, do most people work an 8-hour workday, or does it vary?
Well, sometimes they have to work 10, 12 hours a day. And sometimes when they say, oh, I'm going to earn overtime, so I'm going to have more money left to do something else with that money. But at the middle of the week, they can say, don't come tomorrow. So they don't have to pay overtime.
Because of these problems in the new garment factories, Carmen Ibarra joined an organization called La Mujer Obrera, or Woman Worker. It was created 13 years ago to give these mostly immigrant women information about their rights and to support their demands for justice in the workplace. So what kind of advice do you give the people when they tell you about situations such as that?
We have telling them that after the 40 hours, they had to get time in ahead. I mean, but sometimes they pay them in cash money, so they don't have how to prove they don't get paid.
That they're an employee.
Yes.
So do you direct them, you said you direct them towards OSHA and...
Yes, sometimes we call OSHA to go to see these places. But it can be the very bad situation because OSHA or another agency could close this OSHA, but they can open to the next day in another corner and then another name. So it's not easy to stop.
And also, I'm sure it must be difficult for some women to complain to a government agency.
Exactly. Especially because most of them are under the amnesty, so they cannot receive help, like welfare or food stamps. They cannot.
So they're afraid of losing their job.
Exactly.
And
they
income.
They prefer to keep working in these conditions, but to speak up.
From your perspective, La Mujer Obrera makes a difference in women's lives.
Yes, because we have a lot of our members, they haven't been able to speak out, They're very quiet, they never say anything. By now, when they have problems at work, they know how to defend themselves. I mean, you cannot do this to me because it's against my rights, you have to pay me this and this.
So they change.
Yes. They have been changed a lot. We are very proud of them. Because people, they all the time just cry and say, oh, he told me this, and he did this to me, and they just didn't say anything. No, well, you had to say to them this and this and this. Okay. And they're doing very well.
You're listening to Common Ground, a program on world affairs sponsored by the Stanley Foundation. This is the second of a two-part series about women on the U.S.-Mexico border, the problems they may encounter, and what they're doing to improve their lives. The Stanley Foundation is a nonprofit, nonpartisan organization that works to promote thought and dialogue about the world. Adequate health care is often out of reach for the poorest people in Mexico. But here in Juarez, we're standing in the lobby of what has become a model of medical care throughout the country. Since 1973, this clinic has provided family planning information and maternal health care. And there are now 44 affiliated programs around Mexico, with 6 hospitals serving the needs of the entire family. All are run by the Mexican Federation of Private Health and Community Development Association, known by the acronym FAMOP. Anna Barney is FAMOP's development director.
If you can imagine, this was just 2 little rooms up there in 1976, before 1976, and this has all grown since then. We try to give our patients the same care that they would get in, that you and I would get. That's our goal. Mm-hmm. We don't want any differences. Okay, that's what we work for. They pay. We try to get, and it depends on the service. The cheaper the service, the more people the pay. The more expensive the service, the less people pay. However, there's an equilibrium in that, and so that we're able to pay our ongoing everyday costs with the money that comes in. Anything extra like equipment, the roof being repaired, whatever that's extra, then we have to, the board has to find money for that. But the ongoing everyday salary costs, electricity bills, things like that, the clinic pays for itself, which is, there are not many places that you'll find that.
And it's paid for by what the patients pay.
The patients pay, right. We're a success story. We don't deal with health insurance, we don't deal with Medicare, we don't deal the equivalent, Medicaid, Seguro Social, none of that. Ours is just strict cash.
So this hospital and clinic is self-sustaining by patients who are the poorest of the poor in Mexico,
mm-hmm.
paying their own way.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
And so we think it's impressive, and it's a model. It's a model that works. And we are trying to copy this all around the country in our programs. We don't. Not every program needs to have a clinic like this. We don't push that. Our program, as I said before, our most important program is the community-based program, which we train our volunteers, our field worker volunteers. I told you there were 9,500 of them to be health workers. They are the ones that they're able here in Mexico to distribute family planning supplies. They're able to give out condoms and pills and foam with once they make sure that the patient is, the client is healthy. But that's not our work. I don't want you to ever get the feeling that that's our work. Our work is a maternal and child health program. And family planning, as we all know, is part of a good maternal and child health program. We want healthy babies, we want healthy women. And then we have a dentist.
Buenos días.
¿Cómo va? Ay, de pobre.
Aquí lo mandamos, ya me dio.
Oh, bueno. This is a dentist in El Paso, retired. And he offered this equipment to us at a low cost, and so we bought it from him, and it's exactly like his technician took it out of the office there and then came and fitted it up here. So we have very good equipment and very good service. We started this off as well just 2 years ago, and at first it took some time. We were only needed a dentist half time. But now we have 2 dentists working the whole day because we have enough work for them. This, I just wanted you to see, this is our pediatric clinic. We have once a month an orthopedist in El Paso, Dr. Jack Heidemann, comes over here. He's been coming now for 5 years to give free orthopedic pediatric services. And so we have children coming from all over the state of Chihuahua to see him run around 40 children the last Tuesday of every month. And he sees them here. We have children who come who are crawling because they can, you know, they can't walk, and he takes them to El Paso, to Providence Hospital, operates on them, and they walk. It's a miracle. And this is the pride of the clinic. This is, she's just going to show them a family planning film. This is the ward. This is our patients come in. Normal births are here for 24 hours. We don't give any bottles. There are no bottles here. So we encourage breastfeeding. It's so difficult to know what really goes on when they go back home. Some of them, unfortunately, don't do it. But the majority of our patients know that they leave here knowing that the healthy way to rear their baby is by breastfeeding. Segundo, sí? This is her second baby. ¿Y qué fue?
Niño.
Niño, sí. ¿Y cuántos más quieres tener?
No, ya no más.
Bueno.
No more.
No more. Everybody says that at the beginning. Oh, pero es posible que en dos años, ¿no?
FAMOP has not limited itself to healthcare services. It's now involved in a whole range of community development programs, including a brickmakers project in Juarez to help them purchase cleaner burning fuel for their kilns. And 8 years ago, FAMOP launched a community bank project. Bank members who would never qualify for a traditional bank loan are able to start up small businesses for themselves. Eduardo Gonzalez is director of FAMOP's economic development program.
Before we open the bank, we go into the community and talk to the leader of the community.
Okay.
And that leader will choose 20 members, 20 women, because most are women in our community, most people are women. The main idea of these loans is to economic activities. So they must use the money in selling food, selling candies, small stores. Because the loan is too small, so they begin in a very low level. We choose a board of directors in our community banks, who is the president, the treasurer, and the secretary of the community bank. And they will meet every 15 days of the whole process of the bank. And in each meeting that they have, they will pay back the loans. So for example, if I give an $80 loan the first time, so I will divide that in 6 meetings, because I have 3 months and every 15 days they will meet. So they will have to pay in 6 meetings the whole $80.
100% they pay back?
Yes. Well, I have around 90% of the loans get back. 10% I lost, because I do not have a collateral, for example. So they can go.
But unlike a traditional bank where they have to put up collateral.
That's right, that's right. Also, we charge an interest that is 1.75% per month. That's the interest that we charge to those loans. So there are 3 things. They have to pay back the loan, they have to pay the interest, and they have to save 20% of the loan. So by the end of the month, by the end of the whole community bank, they will have around $1,000 savings for each of the members of the bank. So they can continue without our loans. That's our main idea.
I started off with $83, and I started off with a few things. I don't want to say that I have a large business, but it's enough to maintain my family.
Cristencia Orozco is a member of Oasis Bank No. 2 in Juarez. The 15 bank members are holding their bi-weekly meeting in the home of the bank president.
My husband was 9 months without work, and I was able to look after the family. FEMAP has helped me in my personal life a lot. With all the experiences of each of the members of the bank, that we share our experiences, we talk about our problems. We come together, we meet for an hour and a half, we might come feeling low, we come away feeling happy.
All of the women in this bank say it's been a good experience for them. They say they no longer neglect their families because they can do their work from their homes on their own schedule. And they often make more money than they did working for someone else. Juan Amaro de Reino has now graduated from the community bank to FAMOP's micro-enterprise program, where she and her two adult daughters run a business together.
Yo vendo de artículos de segunda. Vendo muebles.
I sell second-hand articles. I sell furniture, I sell carpets, clothes. Everything is second-hand what I sell. She started with $10. She makes around $300 clear after costs weekly. Her husband, he works in a maquila. Oh no, so he earns the minimum wage. The minimum wage here is around $45 a week. She pays all the bills. She pays the light, the electricity, the gas, the water. She pays everything with what she makes.
Even an economically advanced country like the United States can learn from developing countries. FAMOP's community bank program has become a model here. Across the river from Juarez, in the tiny town of Anthony, New Mexico, the Women's Intercultural Center is preparing to start its first ever community bank using donations from the El Paso area. The program is known as Semillas, or Seeds. Margaret Schellenberg has been consulting with FAMOP on how the bank could work for immigrant women in the U.S.
We're trying to make it real clear to them that this is no instant solution for monetary problems, that it's a process that's going to engage them over a period of 2 years, that it's a small amount of money that only over a longer period will make a difference in an income generating strategy here. Usually on the Mexico side, women can take $50 to $80, go and buy things like sodas or used clothing or eggs or potatoes and find a strategic location for selling that, and they can instantly double their profit. On this side, it's not that easy. This area where we are right now does not have that kind of market. I think the women are having to think more creatively than selling used clothing or eggs or whatever, because those things are pretty cheap on this side and people easily have access to them.
What's also unique about this, I think particularly for Americans, is the fact that these people who are getting loans are not putting up collateral, which is I think the only way most Americans are familiar with ever getting a loan.
Right. Yeah. The collateral is their belief in themselves and the fact that they're going to be accountable to each other, that they figure that somehow together they can do it. There's a cooperative spirit here. There's a belief in themselves as women. Certainly this center here, I think you've heard from the other women that's at the foundation of this whole center here, is that it's brought women together, that they've learned that there's more strength in being together as a women's center than it is in isolation. And so I think that same kind of idea applies as a model for the community bank too, is that they're all really scared of failure, but I think they think that together they believe that they can succeed, that the loan is not quite as terrifying when they know that they're going to be supporting each other and in the ability to pay back their loan. For me, one of the great possibilities is thinking about what developing a women's bank here in Anthony could mean in terms of making small loans available then to women beyond the community bank, and how that can become a model of cooperation for women throughout the area. It's got a lot of potential.
Inside the Anthony Women's Center, the community bank members are meeting to explain what projects they have in mind to make money for their group.
Each person that's a member of the bank will be able to get a loan of $100. And there are three people in my group that will start together. And so we'll be able to buy the initial materials that we need, like we need a grill and the ingredients for tortillas. And there's a group that's going to make futons. They'll construct the frames, and then they will also make the mattresses. We'll start out working like 2 days a week. So there will be a group that will start with futons, and if they need help, those of us who are doing their tortillas can help them. Each one will have their own group, but then if they need help in another group, you can go help. Like if they need help with making jackets, then the people in the futon group can help make jackets. It's one bank, because the money will all be going through this same central bank, but the women will be doing various projects, at least three different projects.
Translating was Sister Kathleen Erickson, who has nurtured the Women's Center and the Community Bank. Do you think there are some unique problems for women on this side of the border, immigrant women, in forming a community like this that they don't encounter, say, just across the Rio Grande?
I think the major problem here for most of them is isolation. Most of them did not have the luxury of coming with their whole extended family, which they're used to living with in Mexico. And so they come, they're very isolated, they don't know the language, they're a little bit afraid to get out and try to meet people on their own. And so to have a center like this where they can come and begin to make friends has been really important for a lot of them.
Sister Erickson's thoughts are confirmed by one bank member named Isa Marie.
El proyecto de la sister es bueno.
The projects we're doing here are very good because for a time it was very, very difficult for me here. Because for a while I thought I was wrong. I had been wrong. To come here was a mistake. I was glad to be part of the beginning of this project because it can be a great help to people. People don't want you to just give them money. You need somebody to listen, even if they can't fix it. That's why I think it's really good for someone to come. To come to this country is very, very hard.
From the borderland between the United States and Mexico, I'm Mary Gray Davidson. If you'd like to order a printed transcript or an audio cassette of this Common Ground program, please contact Journal Graphics. Their toll-free number is 1-800-824-5746. Ask for program number 9437. Individual programs cost $9.95 plus shipping and handling. The two-part series is $15.95 plus shipping and handling. Transcripts cost $5 apiece. If you'd like more information about the Stanley Foundation, which sponsors Common Ground, or you have some comments about the program, please write to us at 216 Sycamore Street, Muscatine, Iowa. The zip code is 52761. Again, to purchase transcripts or tapes, contact Journal Graphics at 1-800-825-5746. B.J. Lederman. Common Ground was produced and funded by the Stanley Foundation.